This is Science Friday. I'm Flora Lichtman.
And I'm Ira Flato.
Ira, have you ever tried to laugh on cue? Actually, I'd like you to try. Will you try to do this right now?
Right.
Okay, but no laughing first.
That's your Halloween laugh. For my kids. It's hard to do it.
Yeah, and there's a reason why it's really hard to do it. It's because laughing is not a mindful, voluntary act, according to our next guest. It's not like speaking. It's out of our control. It's contagious, and we're programmed to do it. But why do we laugh in the first place? What's the point? And how did laughter evolve? I mean, do you think our ancestors were telling each other one-liners?
I think they were the first knock-knock jokes that they were doing.
Well, our guest has a theory about this. Let's bring him on. Robert Provine is the author of Curious Behavior, Yawning, Laughing, Hiccuping, and Beyond. He's also a neuroscientist and professor of psychology at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County in Baltimore. He joins us from WYPR today. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Provine.
Pleased to be with you.
What is laughter, first of all?
Well, laughter is the sound of labored breathing of rough and tumble play, where the panting sound of our exertions became ha-ha. So the ancestral chimp laughter is a panting sound. Being a chimp in good standing, I'll give you a sample.
That's a chimp laugh, you say?
Yeah, that's where it all started, this in and out sound. And in humans, it evolved into ha-ha, where I'm chopping an exhalation, just as I'm chopping the sounds of speech in talking to you now.
And what does that mean, rough and tumble play? It means that people made this, or our ancestors made this noise to signal it's okay, keep tumbling?
Yeah, laughter is literally the sound of the labored breathing and rough and tumble play. Where in modern humans, instead of making the panting sound, we do the symbolic ha-ha-ha sound, but it's a sound that I'm playing with you, I'm not attacking you.
And laughter is contagious too, right?
Yeah, laughter and other behaviors. When we laugh, when we hear another person laugh, we don't think, I want to do what that person over there is doing. Just as we don't yawn when we see another person yawn, or cough when we hear another person cough, or even scratch when we hear another or see another person scratching. We have these neurological processes in our brain that, when activated, replicates the action that we just saw. So we humans, in many ways, are beasts of the herd. We are not the consciously controlled, voluntary, rational beings that we fancy ourselves.
So how did tickling, then, get connected to laughter?
Well, tickle would be probably the ancestral form of laugh production, because after all, that gets the rough and tumble play going. In fact, tickle is a neurologically programmed social act that involves give and take. You tickle another person and you reciprocate. So it binds us together in rough and tumble play. It's also the source of my candidate for the most ancient joke. It's the I'm going to get you joke.
We often
do it with babies, and it's the only joke that you can tell both to babies as well as a chimpanzee. It's the, I'm going to get you, I'm going to get you.
So it's not the knock-knock joke, Ira, it turns
no,
out.
No, it's not the knock-knock joke.
Glad we cleared that up.
If you have observations about laughter, maybe from your own life, give us a call. Our number's 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, or you can tweet us by writing the @ at SciFry. That's our Twitter handle. And I want to bring on another guest now, because we have a sort of interesting laughter case study from the field, so to speak. So back in August, writer and comedian Tig Notaro performed a set at the Club Largo in L.A. And about this set, comedian Louis C.K. described it as truly great and masterful. And what Tig's set showed is that you don't need to be light to get laughs. In fact, you can say terrifying things and make people laugh, because earlier that year, Tig was diagnosed with breast cancer in both breasts. And after finding out, instead of canceling that set, she took to the stage. And some of the material she used, you wouldn't necessarily expect to hear in a comedy club. So this is how she opened the show. We're going to give you a taste.
Hello. Good evening. Hello. I have cancer. How are you? Hi, how are you? Is everybody having a good time? I have cancer. How are you? It's a good time. Diagnosed with cancer. Feels good. Just diagnosed with cancer. God.
That's wow. Tig Notaro.
It's clear the audience does not know how to react to her when she says that.
Yeah, let's ask Tig about it. Tig Notaro is a writer and comedian, and she joins us by phone today. Welcome to Science Friday. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I love your show so much.
Oh, thanks. It's great to hear. So I guess before we laugh it up, how are you doing? How's your health?
I'm doing really, really well. I had a double mastectomy, and the doctors feel like they got all the cancer, and so I feel good. I'm excited about life.
That's great. And I was thinking, as I was thinking about this segment, I had read that, but it would be good for the audience to know that you were okay too. But of course, that was the thing that was so masterful about your set. I mean, you know, Mel Brooks said, right, if I cut my finger, that's tragedy. If you fall into a manhole and die, that's comedy. But in your set, you were like, I'm falling into a manhole.
Right. Yeah, actually, a few. I tripped into quite a few. Would it be manholes or menhole? I don't even know. But yeah, I was tripping all over the place.
Yeah, actually, for people who haven't heard it, maybe give us a little synopsis of what was going on in your life and what you covered in that set.
Well, in a four-month period of time, I had gotten pneumonia, and then I took antibiotics for the pneumonia, and the antibiotics cleared out all the bacteria in my body except for C. diff, which alone is a deadly bacteria that took over my digestive tract and was basically eating my intestines for several months. And I lost 20 pounds and was hospitalized, and then right when I got out of the hospital, my mother tripped and hit her head and died. And then I went through a breakup. And then after that, I was diagnosed with cancer. And so when I went on stage at Largo, I was talking about all of that stuff. So it was quite a jarring time.
Not your traditional comedic material.
Not in the slightest. I mean, for me personally, I just did more the most personal stuff I discuss would be things that I observed just around me or interactions that I had with people. It was never much deeper than that. Or one time on Conan O'Brien, I pushed a stool around the stage, making a weird noise for a few minutes. And so it was just, you know, basically silliness. And so walking on stage and saying I have cancer was beyond anything I'd ever done before.
Does the audience take time to actually understand what's going on when you start out?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I had... Just the day before, I had been at a doctor's appointment being told that it was stage 2 with an invasive tumor, and I was crying on the sidewalk to a friend of mine, and then the next day I'm on stage. You know, nobody knew. It was so fresh, and saying I have cancer, people were laughing, thinking, oh, I wonder where this is going. And so I was... You know, it just, that's where it was going, was I have cancer. Like, that's the joke, and it's not a joke. It's really happening, and so the jokes came around that.
I want to give people a flavor of, because I think hearing you describe it, it's almost impossible to imagine how any of this could be funny, but I thought it was really funny. So let's play a clip from that set.
Okay. After I got the biopsies, they did another mammogram, and I had to have my shirt off, and I was standing there at the machine. And the technician said, oh, my gosh, you have such a flat stomach. What is your secret? And I was like, oh, I'm dying. Just pure and simple. The condition I had in the hospital is called C. diff, and so I just refer to it as the C. diff diet. You just sit there and watch the pounds melt away. Don't like exercising? Who does, girlfriend? This diet does all the work for you. Just clear all the bacteria from your intestines and let the C. diff whittle away at your waistline.
Robert Provine, what's your take? What do you think makes us laugh in this? Or how can we laugh in spite of what we know to be true, which is that it's...
Well, the best approach is simply to observe what people do. Don't ask them why they do it. In fact, stand-up comedy is not a good model for everyday laughter. Our lives are filled with laughter, but we don't decide to laugh. It just happens. And also, people aren't telling us jokes at a furious rate. The essential ingredient for laughter is another person. For example, in Tig's audience, you had a group of people, and they're laughing when they hear other people laugh. So laughter is contagious. Also, it was a comedy club, so they came with the expectation that they were going to get comedy. And so I've got cancer ends up being part of comedy. Also, you know, what if it was a newscast? You know, what if an NPR newscaster came out and said there was an earthquake in Japan? And, oh, by the way, I have cancer. It's probably not going to work. And also, humor is not going to work if you just, let's say, had three people in the audience nursing warm beers, mm-hmm. as opposed to a packed house that Tig had. Mm. And also, it's not by chance that there's the ancient Greek masks of comedy and tragedy.
And we're going to get back to
that. They often go together.
Really, really soon after this break, we have to take a quick break. But stay with us. The laughter talk will continue.
I'm Ira Flato with Flora Lichtman. We're talking about comedy this afternoon.
Yeah, our war on seasonal affective disorder continues this hour on Science Friday. We're talking about laughter with our interdisciplinary panel. Robert Provine is the author of Curious Behavior, Laughing, Yawning, Laughing, Hiccuping, and Beyond, and a neuroscientist and professor of psychology at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. And Tig Notaro works in the field, so to speak. She's a writer and comedian who splits her time between L.A. and New York. So, Tig, when I heard your show, I laughed out loud, but people near and dear to me said that it was too sad, really, to laugh loud. And I wondered if people near and dear to you could bring themselves to laugh about it. And I also wondered, this is for you, Dr. Provine, if what this suggests about us laughers. Are we less empathetic? What's wrong with us? Why are we laughing at this?
Well, first of all, you're beast of the herd. You do what other people do. So laughing is not a matter of deciding to speak ha-ha. It's simply a neurologically triggered response to your social circumstance.
So we're not even thinking about it.
Yeah, and also, most laughter is not a response to comedy, which is a modern linguistic and cognitive contrivance. So laughter is ancient, but comedy is modern. Consider, throughout the ages, there's a lot of concern with the dark side of laughter in a less PC time. You know, the likes of Aristotle and Plato were very much concerned with laughter, because it was reflected a dark side of human nature. It could undermine authority and lead to the overthrow of the state. If you ever doubt the power of laughter, look at the response to the Islamic cartoons in the Danish newspaper. How many died, and how much destruction and outrage was triggered by laughter. So that gives you an idea of its power. Also, the boys going through Columbine High School, shooting their classmates, were laughing. So we shouldn't always associate laughter with positive things in life. It also is associated with some of the worst things.
Mm. Let's go to the phones. Freddie in McCall, Idaho, do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I actually mostly had a comment. I wanted to comment on Tig's bravery and tell her that I work in the ambulance service. I'm a paramedic and a firefighter, and we use laughter as a means to diffuse the stress that we run into in our everyday job situation. And a lot of times we deal with people like Tig in those moments of you know, where they are at the bottom of that well. And Tig's stand-up routine really rings true and was really effective at bringing laughter to my crew just because of kind of the mortality of it, and that's something that you don't get from a lot of comics. So for her to address the seriousness of the issues that she had in a comic setting, we use it at the station all the time. We use Tig as a means to unwind in the evening, and just wanted to tell her thanks for the bravery and thanks for the great stand-up routine, and keep on.
Well, thank you. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, that's wonderful to hear. When I put the CD out, I kind of had to let go of my my ideas of what my comedy was before, in hopes that the CD did reach beyond somebody that had a cancer diagnosis, just anybody dealing with any sort of stress, that it would be a release or support in some way. And that's the feedback I've gotten a lot. So it is always so great to hear that. So thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for the service. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling, Freddie, and for sharing that. Tig, what did that set mean to you? I mean, was did you feel like you just had to do it, or was it to get laughs, or both? How do you think about it?
I was, you know, like I said, the day before, I'm not a big, you know, crybaby. And to be, like I said, I was on the sidewalk after my appointment with my doctor, crying to my friend just about the unknown. And when the owner of Largo texted me the following day, are you going to do the show? And I just wrote back, yeah. There was a part of me that, because I didn't know, because one of my tumors, you know, was invasive and that it had possibly spread, I there was so much unknown, and I was fearful, like, gosh, will this be the last time that I perform stand-up? Especially because the way my life had fallen apart so quickly, I thought, who am I to just assume everything's going to be okay? I assumed that 4 months ago, and it's not. Nothing is okay. And so when I went on stage, I had reached this breaking point of, I had so much coming at me that it had become that uncomfortable laughter, almost like you just lose your mind. You're just like, oh my gosh, this is so outrageous. I have cancer. It all of a sudden became, I was crying, but I was laughing, and so was the audience. Yeah, the audience was laughing, but there were also people visibly crying in my set, and I really was shocked by such the different reactions.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting you say that, because the little clip we played from Comedy Tonight, the last words of that song are "Tragedy tomorrow, comedy tonight," where they seem complementary and necessary to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Previne, what's the connection between laughing and crying?
Well, they're both unconsciously controlled. We don't cry on command, and laughter's not a matter of going ha ha ha. They're also both instinctive behaviors. We don't need to learn how to do them, and they're also reminders that we're beast of the herd, because they're both contagious. We laugh when they hear other people laugh. And we cry, especially babies cry when they hear others crying. But when we look at the laughter, such as in Tig's performance, it works because there's a kind of authenticity. Tig had the skill of getting the audience to care about her. Because most everyday laughter, not just comedy, but most everyday laughter, is done during conversation and play with friends, family, and lovers. And one of the big challenges of a comedian like Tig is getting the audience to care, developing a relationship with the audience. It's not just a matter of going out and subjecting the audience to jokes. Her personality makes all this work, not her material.
That's interesting. Do you find that to be true, Tig?
It depends on the city and the night. But yeah, probably. I mean, I've heard that comedians usually people want, when a comedian's on stage, the audience has to want to go to lunch with that person. And I can agree with that, you know.
So you don't ever get the feeling that they're laughing out of being polite and because of your situation, they want to make you feel better.
I mean, there's, you know, a few people where you can tell they're trying to push a laugh out, and it doesn't sound authentic at all, and it doesn't get the room going or anything, you know. It's not like a room full of people trying to push out a laugh, you know. I mean, that would be kind of funny to have an entire hour of actually, I have a podcast, and on the podcast we do a segment called Forced Laughter. And so we'll do that for about, I don't know, 30 seconds, and it's just, you know, cringeworthy.
Dr. Provine, that might be good for your research. I wanted to talk about this concept, though, of warming up the crowd, of getting the room going. And we actually have a clip from Seinfeld. This is the episode, by the way, where Kramer starts using butter to shave, if that rings any bells for anyone. Anyway, it's Jerry and George, and they're talking about Jerry's frenemy, kind of, Kenny Bonya.
Hey, Jerry! Did you see me up there? I was killing, Jerry. Killing. Kill.
Kill.
Kill. I'm gonna go pick up some chicks. Good-looking ones, too. Hey, what's your name?
Kill. Because I killed first and warmed up the crowd. He's like that fish that attaches himself to the shark.
And you're the shark?
Yeah, I'm the shark, and he's the fish eating my laughs.
How a fish could eat laughs.
Well, I'm glad I brought it up.
Jake, is that true? Does the warm-up matter, the warm-up act?
It can be helpful. I feel like it can, you know, sometimes when somebody goes on before me and they don't do well, they're excited when the headliner comes on. And they're just like, oh, thank God, you know, it's just like this relief. And then just everything is funny, like, oh, that person is gone. And then it kind of gives you an easy in. And then it can kind of give you an easy in, I think, too, when the opener is really good. I don't know, it can go any way in comedy. I mean, it's really, there's certain things that are so, you think are so for sure, and then it's just out the window, you know?
Yeah. Here's a tweet from Ann Sovic, who asks, maybe Dr. Provine, this is aimed at you, if laughter is social, why do I laugh when reading Calvin and Hobbes comics when I'm home alone?
It's a classic.
Yeah, good question. By social, I mean this would also include media, like listening to the radio or seeing something on television or reading someone something and responding to the people in your head. But if there's no people in your head, there's no either immediate or vicarious social stimulation, laughter virtually disappears. So the essential ingredient for laughter is really another person. It would be hard to do comedy in a club that had two people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've
so
done it.
it's a tough gig. But also consider the contagiousness. If there's just two people, you're not going to get interesting contagious laugh effects.
When
laughter starts, it's very hard to turn it off. In fact, a lot of the Christmas parties at radio stations and TV stations has to do with cases where, like, the weather person or the news anchor starts to laugh uncontrollably and just can't stop. Mm. Now, the same thing's true of crying. When a baby starts to cry, it's inconsolable. It's hard to turn it off. So both of these behaviors perseverate. Once you get them running, it's hard to turn it off.
Is that true? Is that true with yawning? Did you say that yawning is not contagious?
Oh, yawning's definitely contagious.
Okay, I wanted to make sure I heard that correctly.
Why don't we
yawning
have, like, yawn clubs, then, or sneezity? Why laughs?
Well, yeah. Fortunately, sneezes aren't contagious. Belches aren't contagious. Farts aren't contagious. Laughing, yawning, scratching, hiccuping's fortunately not contagious.
I've certainly seen yawning be contagious in comedy clubs as well.
You're listening to Science Friday on NPR. I'm Flora Lichtman.
I'm Ira Flatow, hoping that you're not yawning at this moment as we talk about comedy this hour.
Let's go to the phones. Sharon in Edward City, California. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you. It's Redwood City, like the tree. But anyway, I had a question, but I have a comment first since Ms. Notaro was on. We saw you when you did the This American Life theater show. We saw in our movie theater. And right before the lights went down, Joan Baez walked into our theater. And I thought, oh, my God, how in the world can I approach Joan Baez because she's a goddess? And then you did your Taylor Dane skit. And I said, thank you so much. And I went up to Ms. Baez at the end and said, I have to tell you, I hate to bother you. I have to tell you, I love your voice. And she said, my singing voice or my speaking voice?
That's amazing.
That's right from your set, right?
Yeah, well, that's exciting to know. I never thought Joan Baez would know who I was, so that's pretty exciting.
She does, and I saw her after that one more time, and she knew exactly where it was from, and she said the same line.
Wait, you keep running into Joan Baez?
She lives in the town next to ours.
Oh, so she's your Taylor Dane.
She's my Taylor Dane. There you go.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Thank you. And my question was for the doctor. Why can't we tickle ourselves?
Good question.
Well, that's a good one because, first of all, a tickle is a neurologically programmed social behavior whereby it takes another person to tickle us. We cancel out self-produced tickles. You know, think what your life would be like if you went through life in a giant chain reaction of startles. You'd be constantly goosing yourself. So we cancel out self-produced tickle. It takes another person. So in tickle, we have one of the neurological roots of social behavior, and also some hints about how we can program robots where they can be more sophisticated. For example, telling the difference between when they touch something and something else touches them. So you can learn a lot, both in a basic way as well as an applied way, by looking at some of these neglected instinctive acts.
Tig, what about making yourself laugh? Do you have a litmus test for what you think is stage ready?
Really, just if it tickles me, I'll just try it out. I just don't think it's ever smart to rely on. You can run it by someone, but you never know. I do this 15-minute story about running into Taylor Dane, and that took so long to get it off the ground, and I really believed in it. I mean, there's certainly things that I still believe in that nobody else believes in, and there's never been a good response, and so I have to kind of let that go. But I think doing it on stage is what is helpful.
Last question for you, Dr. Provine. Is there any scientific reason why some people have no sense of humor?
Well, that's a good one.
Well, it may be that they're not sociable beings. That's a tough one. It's always harder to talk about why we do something as opposed to why we don't do it. But I'd like to mention something about your laughter during the show. You've always or almost always laughed during gaps in conversation, what I call the punctuation effect. You laugh where you would put punctuations in a transcript of speech. For example, you'll say, well, I've got to go now. You don't say, well, I've got to go now. You don't do that.
Well, we've got to say that now.
We got to go now. Literally.
But did you decide to do that?
Yeah.
Because by looking at that, the fact is that laughter does not interfere with speech.
No, I'm not joking. We really do.
We have to go now.
we're really
I'm afraid we must be going.
Speech is dominant over laughter.
We're really out of time. Thank you, Dr. Provine, for joining us. Robert Provine is the author of Curious Behavior, Yawning, Laughing, Hiccuping, and Beyond, and is a neuroscientist and professor of psychology at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. And Tig Notaro is a writer and comedian. Her whole set from Largo is available on iTunes. It's called Tig Notaro Live.